Welcome to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational, but always amusing conversations about movies. Double Take is a Cinema Classics production hosted by Johnny DiLoretto and John DeSando. I'm Johnny DiLoretto.
I'm John DeSando.
This here is Double Take.
It is.
And we talked about on our previous show, our other show,
yes,
Cinema Classics.
Cinema Classics.
We just did 600 episodes of that thing.
Get out.
600 episodes.
That's 11 years.
11 years that comes up to.
And we're amusing those whole 11 years?
I don't know. I don't know that. You amuse me.
You just said we were always amusing.
This is always amusing. This show will always be amusing. I can't speak for Cinema Classics. Yeah, so 600 shows. I'd like to, on this program, on our podcast, talk about our history with the show.
Yeah.
And then maybe later delve into the role and purpose of a critic in today's society. So anyway, 600 shows. What do you think? Did we evolve at all?
Well, you know, I've certainly evolved. And actually, I've seen you evolve as well. And what I have evolved is a much deeper understanding of the connection between cinema today and cinema 100 years ago. And I think we've consciously tried to tie in whatever has happened in the past.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. The show, I think, Cinema Classics, evolved all by itself in a couple of different ways. One was, it was supposed to be a format to talk exclusively about classic films.
Exactly. Boy, we got out of that fast.
We got it. Yeah. We right away, just given the nature of our rapport and our friendship, we want to talk about what we're seeing, what, you know, and that's how it really began, right? I mean, we might have started off with a few classics, quickly we diverged from
you're
that.
You're so right. I remember 11 years ago, Clay Lowe and I had, well, it was more than that, probably 12, 13 years ago, Clay Lowe and I had devised Cinema Classics, and we had a list. I don't know how many classic films we had on there. Mm-hmm. And we were going to rip through those. Then he retired, and you were doing your television bit.
Yeah.
And you and I were good friends. You were the natural person to take over from Clay on that. And I don't think it was very long after that that the pattern for this show evolved. And then I have evolved is my appreciation.
Well, what was fun is, and it wasn't so far afield from what, if Harrison Ford came out with a movie. I mean, people with careers like Harrison Ford, it winds way back.
Of course.
You know, it has roots back in little, you know, small parts, like an Apocalypse Now. And so you can very easily bring the history of cinema into almost any conversation about anything.
You're so right.
I even think sometimes contemporary filmmakers who might not be well-read or well-versed in cinema history, sometimes they might even be unaware of how they've been influenced.
Sure.
And so that's a fun thing to
unpack. Well, take a look at what we did with Dave Franco's Rental.
Yeah.
And we immediately dragged Alfred Hitchcock in.
Sure.
And why not?
Right, among other things. And you know, here's the other thing. I started making associations with even more contemporary films like Drive.
Yes.
The killer in that movie is wearing a mask. It looked like Ryan Gosling's character out of Drive had just plopped down in the last 20 minutes of that horror movie and started wreaking havoc.
Yes, 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 yes. And and on Cinema Classics over the years, we have taken directors who have naturally brought us into the history of cinema. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned Hitchcock because we recently did Rear Window. And it was inevitable to drag in everything that had happened before for that director, which also was the history of cinema. And we mentioned Martin Scorsese as well.
Right.
These bridges to the past, who's active and evolving himself with cinema.
Yeah, for sure. We also talked about Christopher Nolan.
Yes,
and,
good one.
How that guy's films tie in to, you know, one, first of all, everybody's career, this is the other fun thing. You know, obviously Christopher Nolan was influenced by James Bond movies and noir films and Michael Mann. Everybody's constantly saying that The Dark Knight is sort of a Heat riff. But what's fun is to also look at a filmmaker's career through the lens of their own filmography and how they're changed. Like, there's always a dialogue with somebody's own work. You know, you can't escape your filmography.
Exactly.
Right? we've always talked about auteurs on cinema classics. But then you have somebody like Michael Curtiz, the kind of director who doesn't at first glance have a signature style or voice.
I love him.
And yet somehow has carved out over the span of that guy's 40-year career probably the greatest hits, more greatest hits than almost any other director.
How inevitable was it when we talked about, we devoted a whole show to Casablanca, mm-hmm. as it deserves, and talking about that director and his filmography brought us in again to both the old and the new.
Yeah.
So that was the fun. And we've done clusters. For instance, we've done superhero movies. We've done whole shows on superheroes. We've talked about Avengers, but you can't separate them from the heroes that have come before.
Right. Here's a weird question for you. In all those conversations,
yes.
600 of them,
oh, gosh.
Who has come up the most, do you think? What figure, what cinematic figure, either in front of or behind the camera, do you think has cropped up in our conversations the most number of times?
Well, I proved it already on our show. Alfred Hitchcock.
Okay.
At least for me. Then contemporary, it would be Scorsese, I believe, that we have probably mentioned more than not.
Okay, now, I'm surprised. I thought you were going to say either Woody Allen or Clint Eastwood.
Well, that's a good point. I think you're right about Eastwood.
This is the top four.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right about Eastwood. Woody Allen, we've almost been anecdotal in many cases.
Yeah, right. I don't know that we've...
Yeah, I've just been irritated at you devolving that that director and my trying to firm him up.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. It just seems to me over the years that he's gotten flaccid. Yeah, here we go.
Why did I even bring that up?
You should have never said anything. Okay, 600 shows in. That's Cinema Classics. We are only about 3 or 4 shows deep into Double Take.
Yes, correct.
Okay, yeah. So you're listening to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational, but always amusing conversations about movies. We are still looking for a sponsor. So if anybody wants to underwrite this program, you can reach out to me at johnnyd@wcbe.org.
We've had a sponsor before. But in these times, sponsors tend to fall away.
I just want to throw that out there.
Sure, yeah.
Let's pivot here. I recently got into a scrape. Well, it's not really a scrape because the other person wasn't fighting back. I noticed that John Cleese of Monty Python and Fawlty Towers fame,
sure.
Fish Called Wanda, he must have a bug up his ass about something because he got on Twitter to rail against critics and criticism, and his argument was, and I'm paraphrasing, how is it that someone who cannot do the things they're criticizing be a critic about it? In other words, a critic can't make a movie. Critic hasn't made a film. And so what gives them the right to criticize it? I yield the floor to you.
Well, the same thing can be said for great acting teachers. You know, when did you see the last film of that person? Maybe not. The same thing for teachers. Why are you teaching? Why don't you do? Well, I don't have the patience to make a film. Mm-hmm. I think I could, given if I had started 50 years ago, and I think I could have evolved into a good filmmaker, but I don't have it.
Yeah.
But I am so enthusiastic about it, and I am so perceptive about it, that I can comment on it. And I'll tell you in the end, you know what I am? I'm a cheerleader.
Right.
I'm a cheerleader for great movies.
Yeah.
I'm searching for
them. And I actually responded to him on Twitter, not that he paid attention, but the first thing I said was, first and foremost, you have to understand that this comes from a deep love. This comes from a deep love and passion for something. And so actually part of it is the remove from the process that makes criticism worthwhile. If, as he posited, what should be is filmmakers criticizing other filmmakers, that would never, first of all, that wouldn't go over very well because, one, it might just be masturbatory.
Oh, sure. It is self-serving.
And two, it might devolve into real sort of hostility.
Sure.
I mean, we could see this on the local level with a lot of smaller, younger local filmmakers. There's kind of infighting all the time. So What gives it its value is the remove from the process of making a film itself. And then above that, the passion with which, you know, it's informed. And like you said, you're looking really, you know, I always say there's two, I'm a critic and a fan, right? I'm a critic and a cinephile.
Yeah.
So believe me, when I sit down in a theater seat and the lights go down in the theater, or I'm sitting at home and I start up, I hit play, believe me, I want to love what's going to happen next.
Well, let me tell you.
I want it to change me. Yes. I want it to illuminate something about existence for me. And I want that to happen. It doesn't always happen.
Well, you know, it's so important also the way I sit down. And I sit down similar to you. I'm ready to go. But I am ready to be transported, and I am willing to be transported wherever that filmmaker wants to take me.
Yeah.
My job is to comment on how well that filmmaker does but then I have to look at things that unify the film, like theme, and see how well that filmmaker has done that. That's my job.
Yeah. How do you navigate this question? People always say, I don't want someone to tell me how to think.
Yeah, and I'm not at all. I think, as you have always said, it's what we think, not what we want you to think. It's what we think. And over the years, and certainly we must have done something right, don't you think? Over 600 shows.
I would imagine.
I mean, somebody somewhere has faith in our
ability. Well, maybe it sounds
ability.
Like we're not telling, you know, we don't sound really sort of, you know, we're not pontificating.
No,
here.
And we're not dictatorial.
But I will say, you know, as someone who has been a critic for a long time and who has read a lot of film criticism, I recently started rereading some old Pauline Kael reviews.
Now it's a good place to go.
She is so fun to read, and her passion is evident in every passage. But, you know, I don't always agree with her. In fact, I would say I disagree with her more than I agree with her. That doesn't mean I don't feel like she's telling me from on high, this is the only opinion. But I will say that even when her opinion differs from me, she's illuminating something I didn't think about.
Yes.
She's giving me a perspective I didn't think about.
Yes, yeah.
And it's fun. Again, fun. It should be fun, right? It should be fun to listen to smart people, hopefully informed people, talking about something they love. And maybe by virtue of their passion and their insight, it gives you a little context, a little something more to bounce your experience off of. That's what it's all about. It's really always a part of a larger conversation.
Well, as critics, and I'm a soulmate with you because the two of us were English majors.
Yeah.
And what we're doing, I think, is looking at the structure of this work of art and making it understandable and appreciable to an audience that may not care as much as we do.
Yeah.
But our passion that you talked about allows us to unify that film and allows us to open doors that might not have been, not because people aren't smart enough, it's just that we live this.
Yeah.
And we have learned how to look at storytelling. And this is all storytelling.
Yeah.
And we're commenting on the value of this storytelling and really shortcutting a much longer experience that people haven't had the joy that we have had over the years in looking at that. So I really like the way you imply, and it's certainly I'm inferring, at least from yours, is the happiness that we bring to ourselves, we bring to others. And I believe that we are a necessary middle ground between the filmmaker and the audience.
Exactly. It's always a conversation about the audience. That's one of the things I tweeted at John Cleese in response to his question. Was this isn't about you. This isn't about the filmmaker. No one's going to like write a review and say, hey, Scorsese, what were you thinking with this tracking shot? Or what, you know, why this musical selection? It's not about that. It's about us, the audience. It's a conversation with the audience. And that is the key takeaway, is that it's a conversation. It should never be somebody telling you what to think. I think what happens is if people like something, and then they read someone's negative take on it, they just get defensive. They just feel like someone's attacking something they like. And as I mentioned, reading these older reviews with Pauline Kael, in particular, I read one of Rain Man that I felt was really off base. First of all, she dismissed Tom Cruise's performance wholesale.
Mm-hmm.
Barely talked about it, said he didn't do anything physical, blah, blah, blah. The performance is all physical. Sure. It's this conversation that's supposed to be happening. It's not cemented, you know. And also, the unique challenge of being a film critic, when you have a book in your hand, you have all sorts of temporal control over that book. You can go back, you can stop, you can underline passages. A movie doesn't stop for you if you're actually in the theater watching it. A movie will just keep moving forward. And it's up to you to kind of be prepared enough and be present enough to tackle it, you know, to play with it on its way, because it's not going to stop.
Listen, we are art appreciators. Constantly try to pick films that are artful and satisfying in an intellectual and sometimes emotional way. So we're there to help out in a very important struggle that a culture has with its ideas that are always reflected in films. It's not easy. For instance, one of the things I don't do regularly, which I find every time I do it, why don't I do this every time, is watch a film more than once when I'm commenting on it. I think you were talking with me before about the impressionism of the one shot,
yeah,
one time. And you're so right, because I found the second time I see so much more richness in a work of art.
Right. Well, it's difficult, right? Because a movie comes out, or it's coming out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know.
And you know that after that, more mm-hmm. movies are going to come out. And so you have, they're going to screen it for you here, right?
Yeah.
And then you got to go there at a certain time. Maybe that doesn't coincide with your schedule. Maybe you have to watch a screener or a DVD of it. And that raises some questions too. But you sit down, you have to produce a set of coherent ideas about this experience that you've just had with this movie. Time is of the essence. And the movie, as I said, doesn't stop.
Yes.
Now, if you're watching it on DVD, that's about as close as you can get, or streaming it, as close as you can get to an experience where you can control a little bit.
Yes.
You can go back
if
you miss something, or you can close caption.
Yes,
rather.
Yeah.
You know, you have this one shot to do it, and we don't always get it right. And that's what I'm saying. What we say, our ideas, our insights, should only be really illuminating drops in the bucket of a larger conversation with the audience.
Well said. The reason that I love cinema classics so much, not that I don't love its movie time, but cinema classics almost guarantees that you and I have seen the classics we're talking about more than once.
Oh, yeah.
And gives us the depth of appreciation that we want to bring to contemporary movies that we often don't have time enough for because of the timeline that you're talking about. And I go back to the same point. These are works of art. This is not easy. It needs people like us.
Yeah, and I think that'd be the one takeaway, John, from all of this, from this whole conversation, rather, is that I know there are people out there that love movies. You know, there are degrees of them. There are the mm-hmm. cinephiles, mm-hmm. there are the cineasts, there are the movie buffs, and then there are people who just like movies. And what I would love more than anything is to take the movie lover, right, the casual moviegoer, and transform them into a cinephile.
Well,
somebody who's passionate about the medium itself, you know? Because, look, we talked about all the streaming services.
Yeah.
You can't throw a rock without hitting one of them, right? And there's so many movies on there, and people are just devouring visual content at an alarming rate. And without thinking about it, like eating hamburgers or a bag of potato chips. Just stop for a second. Stop and take a look at the process of what's happening. Who's in it? Who's making it? What are they trying to say? Does this have any connection to the past? What is it saying about our future? What's it saying about our experience here right now as human beings living and loving one another? If you're not tackling that, then you're just eating a bag of potato chips.
No, I love the fact that we are forgetting that we had for more than 1 year, Cinema 101 classes at the Gateway Film Center.
Oh, yeah.
So that you and I were in that professorial mode. But I think the same thing happened there that happens with cinema classics over the 600, is that we're elevating appreciation. We're accentuating appreciation. We're offering perspective that over the course of 10 years, we've honed that people can trust what we're saying about a film, that even if they don't like the topic, they might be interested in seeing the film because we have found art in the most influential art form in the history of civilization.
Right. You preach to the choir. And like I said, the best thing, you know, the only thing we really want people to do is converse with us. Yeah. And this thing that you're looking at, stop for a second. Think about it.
Yes. Yes.
That's it. Thanks for listening to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational, always amusing conversations about movies. The show was produced by Johnny DiLoretto and John DeSando.